experience to personal needs. So with that in mind, if we look at the last 10 years, for example, with the inception of what I would call e-learning or web-based learning, the evolution has really taken us from a passive approach to delivering online instruction to a more eclectic mix of not only experts contributing, but students also contributing to that mix, which makes it a very customizable and social experience. So, and again, these affordances are brought to us not only by the experience of teaching and learning, but also the platforms in which to deliver the content and the social environment. So as I walk through these experiences, you'll see some common themes about certain constructs such as, you know, ecosystems and social learning, informal versus formal learning. These are all pieces that contribute to what I would consider the next generation learning experience that probably weren't as prevalent, 3 years ago, for example, just with the advent of certain technologies and just the capacity to deliver these technologies over the web has really afforded the advent of this kind of experience. So real quickly, again, just to provide some context, as I look at evolving trends, it's important to note that in my experience here at Cisco, what we're seeing is a shift from these types of learning experiences coming out of silos or classrooms or even colleges to more of an enterprise level. And as I go through the presentation, I will take you through a CIO scenario, one which I experience on a regular basis, where CIOs are now asked to become more involved in the fabric of teaching and learning technologies, both at the school district or higher ed, even in corporate learning. The CIO now plays a more prevalent role in implementing these technologies, where maybe 3-4 years ago, although the network was important and communications and different collaborative technologies, the CIO pretty much wasn't involved in the day-to-day implementation of such things as, you know, learning management systems or social networks. That was more in the realm of a certain area of the institution, where now we see this stuff being more prevalent at the enterprise level. And again, that varies from CIO to CIO. Some CIOs have done this for years, some are starting to do this now, and some CIOs are starting to get these requirements from their stakeholders. So if you look at several constructs around the trends around next generation learning, I decided to look at the people, the communities, the content, context security, and deployment. And you can see how it's changed from several years back in terms of how these things have evolved to a more virtual experience and more self-organizing in the case of communities, for example. The other big change in this space, in my opinion, has been the content. If you look at the traditional publishing model that evolved from textbooks to CD-ROMs to e-learning, it was primarily driven by one single source, and now clearly it's evolving to multiple sources, user-generated content, more learning objects-based approach. And if you look at just the media world, one of the analogies I like to use is the idea of iTunes, where it disaggregated this idea of an album into songs. And I see the same thing happening with content, where teachers aren't necessarily interested in using the whole course all the time. They might be interested in using chapters or objects and then recreating their own experience for their students, using a tool like a Moodle environment or a Blackboard or a Desire to Learn. So these are some of the changes that I see that really are driving what the learning environment will look like context, security, and deployment are also part of this equation as you look at how infrastructure and applications are changing the way you connect to people, the way you can traverse different firewalls, and also just the deployment, where we're going from a more cloud-based deployment model, which is more rapid in terms of being able to implement it, versus the traditional on-premise, where it requires more infrastructure, IT staff, and time to deploy. Lastly, before I get into the CIO perspective, the other area that's clearly driving this experience is the students' expectations. Students now come to the classroom with a lot of experience around social media. They in essence, are demanding these tools be used in a learning environment. For example, the idea of on-demand content that's derived from the video world, where you can go to Netflix or the web and, you know, pick a TV show you want to look at or view. This expectation now is the same for educational content. This idea of being able to play back a recording now is expected. It's no longer a luxury or something that happens infrequently. It's expected that if a lecture was recorded, it be able to play back at any time. The idea of being able to meet with your instructor or mentor or teacher virtually is also another expectation from students. Being able to access content anytime, anywhere, any device. Again, these are all expectations that come from the consumer world, our everyday lives. And again, these transcend experiences, whether it's a consumer experience or learning experience. It's part of the fabric of people's lives. And again, the expectation is that this also now is part of their learning experience. So as a CIO, and in subsequent presentations, I will take the role, I'll use examples from a teacher perspective and also student. For the purpose of today's presentation, I'm going to focus on the CIO. So as a CIO, you have these evolving trends, you have these expectations that have to be managed. So as a CIO deals with its stakeholders, whether it be faculty members, deans of certain colleges, curriculum directors, CIO has to prioritize and also address how this technology can be implemented to maximize the teaching and learning experience based on the organizational needs. So typical questions that a CIO would ask someone like myself as part of what I do at Cisco is how do we integrate certain technologies into a learning experience to maximize the teaching and learning experience? How do we incrementally phase in a Web 2.0 and video tools in the right priority, again, to maximize the teaching and learning value of the investment? CIOs are constantly asking me about what the future of learning could look like. Again, it's very hard to predict. However, as a CIO, one of the things that a CIO always tries to do is to, as best as possible, make the investment future-proof, scalable, and modular, so there is room for growth, both from a technology perspective and from a business perspective. And lastly, from a CIO perspective, one of the things that is very prevalent in my dealings with our customers is this idea of breaking down silos. And we saw this back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we started seeing the convergence of video, voice, and data, primarily voice and data in the enterprise world, where you had a separate network for telephony, and you had a separate network for data, and you had a separate network for video, and in schools you might have a separate network for PA systems. So the CIOs that have been around have a lot of experience in converging these silos in the enterprise world. Now they're seeing it in the learning world, where you might have, on a typical campus, you might have 3 or 4 LMSs, for example, or 3 or 4 collaboration suites. So the CIO has to now collapse these technologies into one enterprise-level application. Not an easy thing to do, and it requires a lot of planning and a lot of stakeholder buy-in to ensure that whatever infrastructure and applications are standardized on across the enterprise really meets the business goals of the institution. So as the CIO embarks on this, you know, journey, as I like to allude to, there are certain realities that he or she has to always keep in back of his or her mind. And at the end of the day, it's all about teaching and learning. And I see it many times that a lot of institutions feel that they have to invest in the technology and that will solve the problem. Unfortunately, there is no silver bullet in this space. And in 99% of the cases that I've worked on, integration is always needed, whether it's with an LMS, whether it's with content providers, whether it's with registration systems. There's a great deal of integration that is required in this space. In addition, there is a myth that I'd like to discuss that I don't think is prevalent as much people think, and that is the one size doesn't fit all. And clearly, there is no one way of doing this. So, if a vendor or a company or a consultant tries to give a one-size-fits-all, that's a myth. Again, every customer that I work with is looking for modularity and looking for flexibility and looking for a way to scale in a very systematic and methodical way. However, also keep in mind that teaching and learning is at the forefront of these needs. The other reality is, getting back to the aspect of the social media that's influencing the learning world, is the informal and formal learning now lead to personalized experiences. So students now come with this notion that their personal needs should be integrated into their learning experience, whether it's people they're connected to on Facebook or LinkedIn, whether they have a blog. That's all part of their learning experience, and that's that informal piece. So there has to be a complement between the informal and formal learning in order for students to synthesize all of this content and interaction into a meaningful learning experience. And lastly, the couple of things that are more on the technical side of the equation are surrounded around federation. We see now a lot more focus on federation of not only content, but data and tools, with some of the work that's coming out of IMS around learning tools and operability. We see some of the work around the publishing world with Common Cartridge to ensure that whatever systems and applications are implemented can also work in a federated model where you're not stuck with a certain proprietary technology that would not allow you to ingest all types of content or integrate with various tools and share data. And lastly, from a CIO perspective, the reality of converging the IT part of the world, the learning world, and the business world is probably the most critical, because all three are not only important in the implementation. However, from an organizational perspective, these are typically three separate organizations that have to work side by side to ensure that all their requirements and dependencies are carefully managed and implemented for the good of the organizational goals, given the investment that some of these infrastructure and systems require the alignment is very critical as they try to drive a 3 to 5 year plan, for example. So as a CIO, it starts with the requirements. I'm going to focus on a couple of requirements here, several requirements. Clearly there are a whole lot more, and every institution has their own set of requirements. However, for the purpose of this presentation, I'll be focusing a lot on video and collaboration. In subsequent seminars, we'll look at data systems and LMSs. However, for today, the focus is really around requirements around video and collaboration, how to enhance interaction using these tools, how to provide real-time collaborative experiences. From a teaching and learning perspective, again, having been a former teacher, how do I make my classroom interactive using these technologies? How do I keep students engaged? And lastly, how do I improve achievement? Ultimately, the true measure of success in any implementation of these technologies is that I was able to show significant progress in student achievement, improved achievement, and that really is, in essence, the value of these technologies that has to be measured. Clearly, being able to provide these experiences outside the classroom on any device, anytime, anywhere is important. And again, from a technical perspective, being able to scale, have an integrated architecture, and migrate the silos to the enterprise are very critical. So you can see from these requirements is a mix of the IT world, the business side of things, and the teaching and learning. Very critical that all these requirements are addressed in all three areas. So as a CIO, you have to start the journey. There's only so much you can do in terms of, you know, understanding the literature, understanding the trends, understanding the needs. There has to be a journey that has to start in order to implement these technologies. So I want to provide some guiding principles. Clearly there are many more. However, these are the ones that, based on my experience, seem to be either missing or, in certain cases, very prevalent and work very well in certain organizations. Again, these are not in any kind of priority. However, I put them in a list to show kind of a process inherently built into the principles. So from the first step is really about involving all the key stakeholders. So again, if you look at the three groups that I alluded to earlier, having leaders from the technology side of the business, leaders from the teaching and learning domain, not only curriculum directors, but also faculty and teachers are very critical. And then on the business side, individuals who not only drive the financial aspects of the business, but also policy. For example, in the school district, it's very important to have the key members of the policy group that drive alignment with high-stake testing, for example. It's very important to have the policy and business folks. That way, everything aligns up, both from a budgetary, a policy, and then that lines up with the technology and ultimately the teaching domain, which is very critical given that the students experience that piece of the puzzle. Having clearly defined roles and responsibilities is very critical as you look at implementing this. There has to be ownership. There has to be buy-in. It can't be what I would consider a skunk works type of operation where you're not aligned and have the right leaders in place to own their piece of the equation. Every organization has strengths, has weaknesses. There are risks, and those have to be managed carefully and leverage the strengths where needed. Having broad-based objectives is very important in the beginning. That way everybody understands where everyone's headed from an organizational perspective. Aligning those objectives with the organization is very critical, not only from an implementation perspective, but also from a budgetary perspective, being able to show the return on the investment at the highest level of the organization is important. Having ground rules, very important. Certain couple examples that come to mind, and in my work with school districts, for example, having different work streams, each work stream being responsible for a set of deliverables. Those deliverables have to be reported on a weekly basis. Everyone owns that, and everything is managed collectively to ensure that everyone is, you know, addressing their piece of the solution. Having maintaining momentum and having that really drive the implementation is critical. In a lot of cases, I see a lot of momentum in the beginning, and for a lot of different reasons, momentum seems to wane as more complexity is brought into the equation. There are certain other, you know, political factors that might stop the momentum. So having alignment and having buy-in from the stakeholders will really help maintain that momentum and help you implement something in a timely fashion. And lastly, of course, the idea of measuring progress often. So depending on the phase of the project, you have different measurable outcomes. So in the beginning, clearly, it's about development. So the outcomes are based on deliverables and implementation. As you implement certain aspects of the solution, then the deliverables around measurement are focused on what's the value in terms of teaching and learning, and feedback from the teachers, students, seeing how it's impacting achievement, and again, taking those data and then continually to improve the process for implementation, but also all improving the solution itself. Again, just to wrap up this section on the integration of pedagogy, business, and technology, there are some key success factors that I will get into later in this presentation in terms of an example. However, there are probably more that I have not covered here, but at a high level, I want to discuss some of these factors and how the intersection of these factors along with the business, the technology, and the pedagogical constructs play a very critical role in success. So clearly stating a vision and articulating that and translating that to a strategy is very important. And then the strategy needs to include the critical teaching and learning models for the institution. Those are very specific to every institution. Business processes, again, those are very specific. And the governance of not only the existing processes, but the future state. Governance is something that is often overlooked, especially around content. I see a lot of institutions trying to do some innovative solution development around content. However, at some point, as I alluded to earlier in one of my slides, tend to fall into a digital landfill. So governance is very important in terms of what content is published, how you do version control, who's eligible to approve it, who has the right privileges to create content, who has the authority to sanction the content in terms of alignment with standards. So the governance process is very critical, not only from a delivery perspective, but also a creation and a maintenance perspective. And without that process and the governance model in place, after a period of time, you tend to have a lot of content, and some issues arise from that in terms of, you know, version control and which content serves the best purpose for that moment in time for the institution. The other factors that I feel are important for success is to be able to have support services in place. one of the things that I see very often is the day two support is overlooked in the planning process. So that's one of the things that I would stress very strongly in terms of implementation and success is being able to have a support model that's in place. Again, at Cisco, we have day two support in many forms where our customers can call a number, they can log a ticket. This is also very important in the learning technology world. There's always going to be support issues, questions, and it's a very critical piece that has to be implemented correctly, not only to fix any problems that may arise, but it also is critical to the teachers. Before they adopt something, they need to understand that they're going to be supported. And if they don't see that support and they don't see that the organization's behind this, they might be a bit hesitant to adopt something if they feel they're on their own. Being able to, along with that, being able to prepare the faculty, ensure they have the right skills and expertise in place to deliver this next generation experience from a learning perspective is also very important. And then clearly, the solutions and the platform have to be measured in terms of success. So metrics are very important in this equation. Again, tied to the business, not technology metrics, but business metrics around both qualitative and quantitative measures. You know, whether it be attitudinal, whether it be satisfaction measures, and ultimately, it's about improving teaching and learning and improving the academic achievement measures. So one of the things that I recommend to our customers, and there's a number of ways to do this. Some customers aren't able to do this in-house. They need help to set this up. But ultimately, the recommendation is really to have a program management approach to this. If you think about anything that's built in any aspect of our society, there's always program or project management. In this case, I don't feel this is any different. As you roll out a new system, you roll out a new way of doing business, it has to be managed properly to ensure that everything is in place, not only from a development perspective, but adoption, ongoing maintenance and support, and just overall success of whatever is being built. So in my experience and working with customers, we typically come in in the beginning where we try to understand the requirements and do some research and present to the customer what we feel are some of the gaps between the current state and the future state. We hold a series of workshops with various stakeholders in the organization, not only to collect their requirements, but to also ensure that they feel they're part of the process and they're not being excluded from this process. Because ultimately, they're the customers and the users of the system, so we need to understand what their requirements are from a usability and experience perspective. Clearly, today, with the economic climate, there's not a lot of extra budget, if any, floating around. So building a business case is very important because without the business case, it's hard to not only, secure the budget, but also show the return. Because in a lot of cases, in order to do things of this size, a lot of institutions, organizations, school districts have to take budget from one budget line and apply it to this, or maybe cut some budget from other areas. For example, the one that comes to mind is if a school district is thinking about going to online content, they might consider using some of their textbook money for online content. However, before they can do that, they have to not only make the business case, but also show how they can operate in a parallel mode with textbooks and online content and eventually move to an online world, but there'll always be some textbooks. So there's always a balance around the business case, because there's always going to be a parallel way of doing things, and you just don't cut over like a flip of a switch. So there's always going to be a spike in budget needs as you build and implement this, and then eventually cut over to a new way of doing business. The planning, very important piece of this, again, tying back to the budget, but also strategically need to have a plan that talks about the services that are going to be offered, how that impacts the organization positively, and the roadmap and the operational plan, very critical in implementing these technologies to drive these experiences. And once you have the plan in place, the development or the build phase, and then once that's complete and tested, QA'd with the roadmap in place, then there's the run or the maintenance and operations part of the plan. And again, as you go through this program management continuum, you're constantly iterating, right? So if you're in the run part of the project, you're also going to be researching how what you've built is working. So you're always continually in this cycle from a program management perspective of prioritizing and ensuring that you're improving and meeting the needs of the teaching and learning community, as well as the business, and ensuring that the IT investment is allowing you to maximize your return. And I want to present one framework. This is a framework we use at Cisco. However, there are other frameworks. This is certainly, again, getting back to my one-size-fits-all myth, certainly not saying that this is the only way to do it. However, this is something that we do at Cisco, and it seems to work pretty effectively on several engagements that I've been on. Again, this is pretty common. If you look at just the software world in general, the applications world is very akin to that model, where you start with the vision and strategy, having your desired outcomes, and then being able to monitor the outcomes from an operational perspective. And then within that, you have different aspects. Again, depending on organization, you might have to change some of your operating models. You might have to change some of your business models. So for example, we see instances where universities are providing services to the local K-12 districts. Here in Arizona, years ago when I was CIO, the districts weren't able to get connectivity on their own. So they would go through ASU, Arizona State University, for example. So that was a new business model here in the state, where ASU, in essence, became a service provider for the school districts. And that kept the cost down, and also it allowed ASU to have more buying power with the telcos, which again then could pass those savings along with the school districts. So there are a lot of intricacies that have to be taken into account as you implement these solutions, depending on your geography, your local community needs, the stakeholders, who the major partners you bring in. So there's a lot of definition that has to go around how the operating models will support the learning environment. And in this case, a learning environment is constituted of a lot of rich media, for example, video, simulations, collaborative technologies, learning management systems. Again, they also include content management, registration systems, the idea of a virtual classroom, and then more niche applications, for example, like an expert locator application. Let's say you're in a rural area and you're trying to connect experts with your school district. You want to be able to have that in place so students and teachers can connect with experts around the globe on a particular subject. And then clearly, the network is very critical to this, not only from a platform perspective, but also being able to scale these applications and these operations. The network also has to be architected in a way that supports and grows with the needs of the stakeholders. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to walk through one example of this process and using video in this case as an example of what you would do in terms of using a planning framework. To me, this is a very iterative process, starting with the mission of the organization. That leads to scenarios around use cases. So it's very important at this stage to have the personas or the actors who are actually going to deliver the instruction to provide the necessary use cases that drives the vision. Then the vision will drive that future state, which will drive the overall strategy. And then again, that's iterative as you begin to peel back the onion, as I like to say. The strategy will evolve. The future state will evolve as you get more and more people involved and as you get more and more into the details. This is another example of what we use at Cisco with our customers in terms of charting a roadmap. Again, the time frames here are arbitrary depending on the customer. However, I want to provide an example of the type of engagement that I would lead with a customer. And again, it varies from customer to customer. However, it starts with the business planning and the requirements definition. I like to do an as-is assessment and current state, not only to define the gap, but also it helps me understand the business and understands the culture and understands that institution's perspective. Again, unlike building a network or a more enterprise horizontal application, there's a lot more factors that enter into the teaching and learning space that are very akin to that institution, the business. So as a consultant, it's very important for me to understand what the organization is trying to achieve from a business perspective, a technology perspective, and a teaching and learning perspective, and what makes that institution unique in terms of what we can deliver as a solution. And once we have that in place, we talk about and map out different service concepts. If you think of the things that we're discussing today, in essence, a school district or an institution becomes a service provider to students and teachers. So we have to outline a service model that supports their goals and objectives in the classroom, for example. And with that, that drives what the operating model looks like, what the architecture looks like, and ultimately the program and the functional specifications and the implementation plan. So as far as a vision goes, this is a typical vision that I hear on a regular basis where a customer would like to have virtual learning communities, students learning from home if they can't attend class for one reason or the other, being able to connect to devices other than a PC, tablets, smartphones, and being able to have teachers come in remotely and offer instruction. So starting with that vision, our typical process, we map that vision and the technology to scenarios. So in this case, the scenarios are centered around curriculum integration, staff development, and visual communication. And then we have use cases around each of these three areas, everything from virtual field trips to class events, being able to provide public service announcements. And we drill down into those use cases. And from there, then we have a clear strategy. So in this case, the strategies have an integrated experience that not only provides the video experience, but is also tied into other systems. So for example, if you record a lecture, then that lecture has to be published to the learning management system, and that's very critical to the experience, so the student doesn't have to go to multiple places to find this content. They go through their learning management system or portal to get that lecture that was recorded. Being able to train staff, and again, as you can see from the strategy, it talks about the inclusiveness of all the aspects of the solution. Here's an example of some of the deliverables that I would deliver as part of an engagement, or that the institution maybe might deliver, might create on their own, starting with the strategy, then understanding what the opportunity is to deliver services, and then the strategic document that has all the planning components and all the metrics and everything we discussed in the previous slides that were part of planning framework. So now that we have a strategy, we're ready to look at our solution. I just want to spend a minute. One of the things that's very new to this idea of next generation learning solutions is the idea of an ecosystem. Again, this is very similar to what we see in the smartphone world. You see different ecosystems built around Android, you see different ecosystems built around Windows, Apple, or BlackBerry. I see the same thing happening in education. They're again, getting back to the reality that not one vendor or company can do it all. There's going to have to be an ecosystem in place that plays different roles in this solution. So in this case, you probably need a content provider or several. I mean, I work in one school district. They have 14 content providers. There's a collaborative piece to the ecosystem. There's the business processes that are typically applications outside your typical learning management systems. For example, like a banner type application or student information systems like Pearson SASE, for example. And then we see now more and more this idea of communities being part of this ecosystem and driving the social learning aspects. So again, not one vendor can do all of this, so it's very important as an institution to develop this ecosystem that allows you then to have a building block structure that allows you to conceptually architect how the ecosystem partners come together in the different areas of focus. In this case, again, this is one example where you would have a community piece, a learning management piece, a video collaboration piece as far as your application. Then you offer services around content authoring, scheduling, and then your core piece of the solution is around the security aspects and the infrastructure. One of the things that I recommend to our customers is to have a phased approach. Another best practice is to do a pilot, a proof of concept. I really believe in doing 2 to 3 month sprints, as we call them, to really test out the concept before you make a large investment and really see what works, what doesn't during that pilot, and improve upon that on the larger rollout. In this case, from a video perspective, I would recommend a solution approach that starts with an on-demand approach, then maybe move to a live synchronous type of structure. For example, today this would be an example of how a student can attend a class virtually. And then the last piece of that approach, phase approach, would be the more peer-to-peer social learning approach that is probably the most complex. So being able to do it in a phase approach really allows you to, as we said earlier, build momentum, keep it going, measure progress, and always continually improve during the phases. So as we bring this all together, again, this is one example. If you look at our video example, That's in the visual networking pillar. However, that also has to coexist with other pillars of the solution. So in this case, we have the virtual classroom pillar, the learning and content management system pillar, and the communities pillar. And again, this is not to say that all these things have to come together at one time. However, keeping in mind that you want to scale and align to your 3 to 5 year plan, it's important to have this laid out. And then again, using a phase approach, seeing which one of these areas are important to the business in order of priority, and roll that out as needed. And then clearly at the bottom, you see some of the, what I would call the back end things that need to be addressed. So here you see how, again, the idea of the pedagogical aspects, the business aspects, and the IT aspects have to come together in order to form a scalable and long-term solution to deliver these experiences. So ultimately, what we're doing with this approach is providing a foundation not only for teaching and learning, but as we see the economies of the world changing and the workplace changing, it's very important that students have similar experiences to what they will see in their workplace in their academic experience. And with that, that's the close of my portion of the webinar. And Jill, I think you'll have questions for me.
I do. Vito, thank you. That was a very detailed and in-depth presentation on next generation learning. So we do have some questions from the attendees. I have quite a few really good questions, so thank you to those of you who have posted questions in the chat window. And if we don't have time to get through all the questions today, Vito, if it's okay with you, I'll put the questions in the discussion forums on the Smart Connected Communities Institute website and just have you respond to the ones we don't get to there. Would that be okay with you?
Sure, and we could also start a blog if that would help.
Absolutely, that sounds fantastic. So definitely, if we don't get to answer your questions here in the next few minutes, we will post your questions at smartconnectedcommunities.org in the education section. So please follow up there, and we'll address every question. So to get started, one question we have here, if integration is needed, this sounds like professional services will be needed in order to really create a solution for a school system. How will schools pay for expensive services? So do you have any examples of maybe how schools are budgeting or using grants or anything like that to pay for services?
Right, so that's a great question, and clearly in K-12 that is a challenge. So from a professional services perspective, again, depending on how the budgeting works, what I would recommend, rather than going out and hiring a lot of professional services at first, I would try to harness the talent you have internally to see who's able and willing to lead the effort. Because ultimately, even if you do hire professional services, at some point, that has to be a transfer of knowledge. So my recommendation is always to start with the internal strengths of the organization in terms of people, and then see where the gaps are. But I recommend bringing services, professional services in to fill the gaps as an unneeded basis, but not to lead the effort. I really believe it's important that there are internal consultants, if you will, or internal staff members that lead the effort. One of the things I see when I was a CIO, a lot of school districts brought in outside of consultants to lead the effort, and that just doesn't work on multiple levels, not only from a budgetary perspective, but from a buy-in perspective. You really need to have someone who understands not only the culture of the business, but who understands the organization and has respect, has garnered that respect within the organization before you bring in professional services. And then I would bring in specialized professional services. And one recommendation I have on professional services, make it project-based. I would not do open-ended engagements. I would do a very specific to deliverables-based engagement. So you don't have a case where you have consultants just billing hours. However, you have them basically on a fixed budget, and they have deliverables, and when they deliver, then they get compensated.
Okay, great. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more question here. I know that we're at the time. Can you explain more about the cloud and content delivery management?
Okay. So those are two separate constructs that I'll try to tackle. So if we look at the cloud construct, that's an extension of your existing data center or the existing environment. In terms of content management, there are two aspects, probably more, but two aspects that are critical when you look at content being delivered in the cloud. One is the licensing piece. So a lot of content vendors still haven't figured out their business model on how to deliver content in the cloud in a modular fashion. So in a lot of cases, you have to work with the content provider and work on their system. I don't think that's the most efficient way to do it. So there's a trend that I see with institutions asking their content providers to provide the content so it can be centralized in the institution's cloud. So that's one aspect in terms of the content provider model that has to be refined, in my opinion, before we can truly have a cloud-based content provider model. Otherwise, in the case of one school district I'm working with, they're working with 14 separate content providers, and that's really not a cloud approach. It's not unified, it's very disparate, and it causes a lot of management issues. Secondly, in order to have a true cloud-based content management strategy, you also have to have a way for teachers and students to access that content, add to it, you know, that whole idea of user-generated content. So again, the dependency of the content providers providing a cloud strategy is very important to be able to implement something that is customizable, because really at the end of the day, what the cloud should provide is a customizable experience from a content perspective. So there are definitely some challenges in that area that I see, because the content providers still are operating in a very monolithic fashion in terms of delivering content. So the content providers that we're trying to work with, we're trying to urge them to change their business model so they provide content on a more modular level, object level, and maybe create virtual instances of those content objects that can be stored in the institution's private cloud.
Okay, great. Well, I know we're several minutes past the time here, so I thank everyone for attending. I will post the remaining questions up on the Institute, so please go there in the next day or two here to get your answers from Vito. And just so you know, we did do a recording of this session, so it will be available on the site as a video and a podcast, so you can check that out or share it with your colleagues if you're interested. And we thank you very much for attending today and encourage you to check out the Institute and join the community in the collaboration. So thank you, Vito, very much for taking the time to present to us today, and thank you to all the attendees. So have a great day.